हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So now we've had Krishna has come to meet the Pandavas, and Maitreya Rishi, Markandeya Rishi, has also come. And so then he's also, Yudhishthira's asked him some questions, he's answered. And now then we continue the discussion. Hearing the Rishi's words, the Pandava bowed before Krishna. Krishna smiled gently and spoke comforting words to them. He glanced affectionately at Markandeya, who gazed back at Krishna with love. Yudhishthira then asked Markandeya to describe the future. Kali Yuga, the darkest age, was approaching, and Yudhishthira wanted to know what would happen to the world at that time. Markandeya told him in detail that everything would become more and more degraded. People would become irreligious and would thus be oppressed by misery. The age would culminate in the appearance of the Kalki Avatar, who would restore order to the world and bring about Satyuga, the golden age. So they're oppressed by misery because... See, is whenever there's going to be happiness, there's going to be misery. And so if you're dealing appropriately, you know, for what's of activities that are recommended and performing your duties, then the happiness you get there, then the misery will come. That would be light. But the point is that the happiness is more sattvic. So the sadness also takes on that more lighter flavor. But if we become irreligious, like you're saying, it's become degraded, that means then the happiness they gain is not actually the appropriate happiness. So it'll be more by influenced by passion or ignorance. So that means the misery that'll come will also be greater. So he's just pointing out as it goes. And the misery becomes what's prominent. People are always striving for happiness, but that kind of happiness that you're striving for, that's what determines what kind of misery you have. Yudhishthira and Markandeya discoursed for hours, and the audience remained fixed on hearing Markandeya's detailed responses, replete with accounts of the different kings, sages, and celestials who had lived throughout the ages. And so, because when you're giving these accounts and all that, then if you have the capacity, and that if you tell stories linked with it, like you're making a particular point, then having made the point, you give an illustration by a story, then that's always going to be very strong. Otherwise, you just give some example, and it works. But if you can tell a story along with it, then people get an experience, right? If I give an example, the example will, then the intelligence will say, okay, that sounds good, and the mind then accepts, yes, okay, this sounds good. So there's a clearing of the doubts like that, you know, or even maybe an understanding. But you don't necessarily get anything. It means there is, of course, there's going to be an impression that it's something good and all that. Then you can take it and try to apply it in your life. But if through telling a story, then you see how someone applied that in their life and what was the effect. Because, you know, you're trying to show either something's good, so how somebody applied that got good results, or something's bad, so someone acted in that particular capacity and got a bad result. So then by going through that, then you actually experience it. So then that gives you a impression or a samskar that now you have a more of an understanding of it, and even maybe possibly a value. So that's why the Puranas are considered the best, renditions of the philosophy and the religion, because it actually creates that, you know. But of course, that's for those who are very intellectual. Then without that, they'll catch it, and on their own, they'll create that. But the point is the Puranas just make it so much easier, so much more straightforward, because the Puranas would be appreciated by the intellectuals and the general public. But the Upanishads and these other technical will only be by the intellectual. So they have much more of a universal appeal. So it's not that they're lower. They actually go deeper. Because if it's a matter of you're taking higher, oh, it's more technical and more intellectual, then you could say on that platform, okay, yes, Upanishads are higher. But from the other point is that if the point of human endeavor is to get the experience to elevate yourself and go back to Godhead, then how is the intellectual the better path? It's the practical path that you're going to apply it in your life and get the effect. So we see here is that therefore then they're telling and everybody was listening. Because it's not just Yudhishthira and his brothers are there and Draupadi. Then you can say, okay, yeah, okay, that's good for Kshatriyas. But also all those hundreds and hundreds of illustrious Brahmins are there. They're all listening and Krishna's listening. So then we can understand that, you know, it's a very good medium. Not that there's something wrong with the other. It's just it has certain advantages. As evening approached, Yudhishthira finally stopped asking questions. Along with his brothers, he worshipped Markandeya. Then the Rishi took his leave. Narada also left at that time, ascending into the skyways. When Markandeya was gone, Krishna spent a little more time talking with the Pandavas. Satyabhama took the opportunity to speak with Draupadi and ask her how she was able to serve and satisfy five husbands. Right? Because she's just trying to satisfy Krishna as one husband. So she's impressed. How is it Draupadi's taking care of five? So she wants to know if there's anything there that I could use in my service to Krishna. Krishna's wife wanted to learn from the Panchala princess, who was famed for her chastity and womanly skills, so that she might improve her own service to Krishna. Draupadi told her in detail about the many ways she served her husbands. Draupadi said, "Abandoning vanity and subduing desire and wrath, I serve my husbands with attention, along with their other wives. I do not feel my position of servitude to be a degraded one, and I restrain jealousy by remaining devoted." Right? Because if you're focused on something devoted, that's the common point, and that then doesn't make anything else. So he's saying that there's other wives that are there, so co-wives. So if she's focused in that particular mood of devotion, then you won't come up with the jealousy of, you know, she's a competitor. So that way then, if that mood is there, then the other ones will move and it'll work very nicely. Or if the other ones are being jealous, that's their problem, their anxiety. Draupadi won't have any problem. "I neither bathe, sleep, nor eat before my husbands, and even before our servants and followers. At no time do I allow my mind to dwell upon another man or any celestial. My heart never swerves from my husbands. The minute I see them, I rise up and greet them, offering them a seat and water. I always keep our living quarters clean and fragrant, and all the household items and food well ordered." Right, so she takes everything very, very nice, because the more it's nicely kept, the more the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is the source of the mind. And if the mode of goodness is prominent, then the mind is peaceful. So it creates a very nice atmosphere for everyone. Satyabhama herself, a great devotee of Krishna, listened attentively. Draupadi described how she would never enjoy anything her husbands did not enjoy, nor would she perform any act disagreeable to them. When they went away, she renounced her ornaments and cosmetics and practiced asceticism. She tried always to assist her husbands as they performed sacrifices and other religious practices. Right? So all these are considerations of the relationship. One could say is, oh, but you know, what about herself? What about her own needs? What the point is when we talk about these own needs, much of the time nowadays, you know, especially in recent times, we're talking about corporate needs. Needs that are projected by corporates so that you will actually enhance the market by adding volume. So it's, oh, I need this, I need that, I have to work to get this, I have to work to get that. Oh, it's cool to do this, it's cool to do that. These things are there and they give some variety, they give some interest, they give some excitement, something to talk about. But they can never compare to solid relationships. So in other words, people have been distracted from solid relationships which don't require any excess money, you know, to a middle-class lifestyle, which means then you have excess money that you can spend like that. Not that before they, not that they didn't have the money, they just put it away for bigger things, you know, buying a house or doing different things or weddings or, you know, some very nice special kind of gifts and things like that. And so, but that kind of money doesn't make the modern market work. And so then you have to bring it into that the market works because there's volume. People are constantly buying stuff they don't need. That's why there's advertisement and all these things. And so then Draupadi, she's intelligent. She understands relationships are the real thing. So if those are solid, then even if you have nothing else. So it's just like this. What would you rather have? All your fancy little this and that and all that and no family? Or have your family even if all those things are gone? Right? So people will say, no, I'd rather have all those things. But we see this as one gets much more, as ages with time, you see relationships become more and more valuable. Because in the end, all those things will go away. And all you're left with is people and relationships. And so she's smart. She sees that. And then if you see that, that it's relationships that are important, then it becomes very easy to understand the supreme relationship or the relationship with the Lord. Relationship with Krishna, that's the most important. In other words, relationship with Krishna and his devotees, that's the most important. And if that's in place, everything else will work nicely. Then Draupadi continues, I am the first to rise from bed and the last to take rest. I am ever attentive to my duty and never give way to sloth, right, or laziness. In my opinion, service to the husband is the eternal virtue of women. The husband is the wife's God and her sole refuge. By serving him, she pleases even the Supreme himself and thereby attains the highest destination. Right? Because if she's putting that up to that Supreme, then she can easily take that up to Krishna. That's the whole point, is that husbands, if it's representing the Lord, then it's, she just takes it through to Krishna and takes everything through to Krishna. Wealth has come by Krishna. He's the Lord of wealth. Wealth is used for Krishna. It may be used in the aspects of connection to the family, but it's always seen in the context that, you know, through the duties that we're given, then I'm using all Krishna's elements to perform those services. And the reason I'm doing that is because Krishna recommends it. Krishna Gita says, do your duty, remembering him. Right? You don't do your duty just for the material benefit you get, or do your duty for the liberation you might get. You do your duty because then you can please Krishna. Right? We have to do something. And so therefore then these duties established in what we do. When Draupadi had finished, Satyabhama embraced her. She heard Krishna calling her and so took her leave, promising to come to Indraprastha after the Pandavas had regained their kingdom. Krishna bid farewell to the Pandavas and was ready to depart. He and Satyabhama mounted the chariot, which was yoked with Shaivya and Sugriva. Seeing Draupadi standing before him so meekly, Krishna said, do not be in anxiety. Before long, you will be the wife of kings, after your husbands have crushed their enemies and won back the earth. O black-eyed beauty, ladies such as you, possessed of all auspicious marks, can never suffer for long. Right? You're in the material world. There's always going to be suffering, because we said, as soon as there's happiness, there's going to be a suffering. They just go together. They're, you know, you say, yeah, the two, you can't separate them. And so then, but because of her piety and all these things and her devotion, these difficulties can't be there for long. They'll just come up because it's a material world. The Kauravas will soon reap the results of their sins against you. When they have been destroyed, you will see their wives despairing, just as you despaired upon leaving Hastinapur. Right? Krishna once more assured Draupadi that her five sons were flourishing and that she would soon see them grown up. Powerful heroes. Then, saluting the Pandavas and bowing to the Brahmins, Krishna urged on his horses and left at once. Chapter 31, The Fight with Gandharvas. Early in the Pandavas' 12th year of exile, a Brahmin who was journeying to Hastinapur stopped to see him. He spent a few days with them before continuing to the city, where Dhritarashtra then received him. The old king was always anxious about the Pandavas, and he wanted to hear about them from the Brahmana. When he heard how their bodies were emaciated by their spare diet and constant exposure to the elements, he felt pain. Dhritarashtra was especially distressed to hear how Draupadi was now pale and thin. He lamented openly in the presence of his ministers. Knowing himself to be the cause of the Pandavas' suffering, Dhritarashtra cried, alas, How is it that Yudhishthira, who has no enemy on earth, now lives in a lonely forest and sleeps on bare ground? How is the ever wrathful Bhima able to tolerate the sight of Draupadi clad in barks and lying upon the earth? Surely he restrains himself only out of devotion to his elder brother. Arjuna, seeing Draupadi and the twins in such misery, must be breathing the hot sighs of an angry serpent. All of those heroes and their wives should not be suffering such pain. Duryodhana's cruel words at the dice game must burn them day and night. And I can imagine Bhima's anger increasing day by day, like fire fed with oil. But so he knows, he's intelligent. He knows what is there. He knows the Shastra. But due to his attachment to his son, then he gets carried away. He has to fulfill the desire of his son. So then, but he knows what will happen. And he's also asked plenty. He's asked, he's asked Sanjaya, he's asked Vidura, he's asked others, and so they all tell him what will happen. So he knows, but, he's just hoping, well, maybe it'll change. Dhritarashtra's anguish echoed around the assembly hall. Vidura and Bhishma both sat nearby, but they remained silent. The king continued, "Alas, my sons, along with Shakuni and Karna, saw only the honey at the top of the tree, but not the fall. By robbing the Pandavas, they have acted sinfully. I am also sinful for having allowed it. Surely the Kurus will soon be destroyed. Perhaps all these events have been ordained by the all-powerful destiny. Nothing can overpower fate. Driven by his own unseen destiny, a man acts in ways he later regrets. Hence, I am now left lamenting for the inevitable. After hearing that Arjuna has gone in his own body to heaven and received the celestial weapons, what can I expect from my sons?" So we see here as he does all the things, he knows all the things, and he knows he's wrong, but then he'll say, oh, but his fate, and if fate has destined this, we're going to act anyway according to that. So in other words, he's trying to avoid the blame. So yes, you do have the superior forces that are working there. But because the soul identifies with these things, then the soul is the one that reaps the results in karma. The material energy doesn't. You can say material energy is doing, but the material energy gets no reaction. Material energy gets no reaction in the syllables that vibrate in the air and in the ether that Shakuni spoke, or the dice rolling on top of the board. The material energy gets nothing. So all it is the mechanics that make it work. That would be like I'm driving the car. And so technically, you are giving some indication, but the car does the work. You move the wheel, but it's the tires that turn. It's the motor that makes it go forward. So you're involved in it. But the point is if you say, but if it's destiny and the car is supposed to go here, what can I do? Like that, you know what I'm saying? So you identify with it, and then you'll say, I drove there, but actually the car took you there. You give an indication. So the same way as the material energy is simply the mechanics, how karma unfolds. And so that the living entity identifies with it, and therefore is enthusiastic and has the willpower to take part in it, then that willpower, then as we see, is then what defines what the result is. And so bad work gets bad results. And so Dhritarashtra, yes, it can say that it's destiny, but at any point you have the free will to not follow that path. Like one of the sages pointed out, that the best thing would be to send Duryodhana to the forest with the Pandavas as their servant and let him stay there and serve them for that 12 years. Then he may be reformed in that, because in the good association, it would change his heart. But, it won't happen. Dhritarashtra's voice trailed off into sobs. He raised his hand and dismissed the assembly. Shakuni left the hall and went immediately to speak to Duryodhana. He found him sitting with Karna. The three friends had enjoyed the past 12 years, free finally of the Pandavas. Although his father occupied the throne, Duryodhana was actually the ruler. He tended to all affairs of state. Dhritarashtra spent most of his time alone, regretting his actions towards the Pandavas. Duryodhan had steadily increased his strength by forming diplomatic alliances all around the world. He was ready for the Pandavas to return from exile. That was, of course, if they ever came back. Right? So he's making the point that they're under the opinion that they won't come back. But just in case they do, they're ready. They've made all their alliances, they've done all the things, so they have so many kings that are willing to fight for them on their side. And so he feels very strong that even if the Pandavas do come back, he's ready for them. But there's a good chance they won't. So the continued conversation will be our next city. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.